first, let's talk about the economy. What do you see as the correct approach for handling the federal budget and the deficit?
I think that we have to have a real bipartisan approach to handling the budget and the deficit, and a real pragmatic approach at what we can cut and what we should not be cutting. And, you know, we need to list our priorities. I have proposed quite a few areas that we can afford to cut before we try to balance the budget on the backs of our most vulnerable. So, for example, I would not support eliminating the guarantee of Social Security and Medicare before we took a look at cutting funding for programs like, defense spending, where we waste about $372 billion in improperly supervised defense contracts. It comes out to about $9 million a day. These are contracts that we allow to expire, or something is wrong with them. We're not supervising them correctly, and then the government has to pay a fee or a fine, and this adds up to about $9 million a day. So we need to cut what we can afford to cut in order to afford those programs that are most important to us.
And moving to jobs, what kind of jobs would you like to see created in your district?
Well, my district has a lot of manufacturing. Now, we don't make, for example, entire automobiles, but we have quite a few manufacturers who make components for automobiles and other industries. It's really a cornerstone of our local economy. The manufacturing sector here in the 8th district offers really rewarding jobs for thousands of people, and it's everything from companies that make parts for windmills to those who make fixtures and nuts and bolts and washers. And so what we need to do is to make sure that we invest in American manufacturing, and that's why I've proposed several things. One, I've proposed tax credits for businesses that hire people here in the U.S., also businesses that hire someone who's been unemployed for more than 6 months. In talking with business owners, they've said that they really need help with access to capital, especially from our hometown banks. The large investment banks that did a lot of speculation that led to the financial crisis are not lending, but our hometown banks are. I, for example, am still a member of the Illinois Community Credit Union. Those are the kind of institutions that are still letting capital flow and investing in businesses. So we need to make sure we support our local banks as well as our local businesses as well.
Are there other roles that the federal government should play in creating those jobs?
Well, yeah, I think there's several things that can happen. I think short term, we need to make sure that we get the economy jump started. That's why I supported the transportation bill. And in fact, that's why every single member of Congress, except for my opponent from Illinois, supported the transportation bill. It's going to bring in a lot of infrastructure dollars that will get the economy moving again. So while we get that going, we then take a look at what can we do to support our businesses. NIU does some great programs in terms of certificate programs and helping students transition through an internship into large-scale manufacturers. And I'd like to do the same thing here in this district with our community colleges and our branches of universities, so that our students can, before they even graduate, start interning with businesses and then move into careers. And that would also provide a real well-trained workforce for our manufacturers as well, so that they can be more competitive at the international level.
Labor management relations, what's your position on right-to-work laws?
Well, I will always oppose legislation that weaken workers' rights. You know, these so-called right-to-work laws, I love these names that people give them because they're absolutely misleading. What the so-called right-to-work laws do is that they allow people to circumvent living wages and the benefits that come with worker rights. And it really affects people here in Illinois. Illinois, for example, is a we are a net donor state in terms of federal taxes. That means that for every dollar that residents of Illinois pay in federal income tax, we only get about 75 cents on the dollar back in terms of federal benefits. And part of this is because these so-called right-to-work states like North Carolina or Florida, the folks there get paid so little that they can't actually support their families. So there is a higher dependence on programs, federal programs like Medicaid and food stamps, even among people who are working, so that those states are actually net beneficiaries. So for every dollar that they spend, they get more than a dollar back into their states. And that's why I don't support this, these so-called right-to-work laws, because what it does is that it actually circumvents the guarantees for workers' benefits and workers' rights, and it creates an artificial system so that the states that have these laws actually are paying people not enough for them to survive and have a living wage, so, and then they depend on the federal government. And then that hurts states like Illinois because we end up not getting back our fair share of the federal income taxes that we pay.
What should the relationship be between governments and their employee unions?
Well, I think that it should be one where of cooperation. You know, I think that when you enter into negotiations, that it should be one where you're not demonizing one another. And I think too often, one side demonizes the other, or you think that there's a zero-sum game. And I just don't think that that's the way it should be. I think that both businesses and workers have an interest in the success of that business. The workers need the business to be successful in order to continue to have a good job and support their families. And businesses need to have workers who are happy and productive and are able to take care of their families. So, and this is why I'm very pragmatic. I'm about making sure that people sit down and work with one another without acrimony and without demonizing one another, and I hope that we can get to that point. I think that we have some real challenges in this country, but a big part of that challenge is that sometimes we start off negotiations without actually negotiating. We start off by calling each other names, and that's not a good place to start.
What course should the U.S. take on domestic energy?
Well, I think that we can create American energy independence through several ways. I think that we first need to reward and promote businesses that seek innovations in renewable energy. We have a business here in the district called Bly Manufacturing that used to make rotating parts for engines and also for helicopters. But because they were very agile and able to switch their production line, now has more orders for windmill parts than they can fill, and they actually double their workforce. And we need to reward and promote that in businesses. We also need to advance vehicle fuel technologies. And there's actually a bill that's proposed by a Republican congressman in Texas who has natural gas deposits in his home district, not the kind that actually needs fracking, but actually abundant natural gas resources. And he has introduced a bill that would provide tax credits for businesses that manufacture kits to retrofit existing automobiles so that they can burn natural gas. He doesn't have any of those businesses in his district, but I do. And here's a way that I, as a Democratic representative, should I win, could cooperate with a Republican representative to help move America towards greater energy independence. And then most importantly, I think we need to talk about conservation. You can't talk about energy independence without working towards conservation, and that will take a concerted effort on everybody's part.
A couple of social agenda issues now. First, how should the federal government deal with abortion rights?
I think that Roe v. Wade has been very clear. I support the framework established by Roe v. Wade, and then there's a subsequent decision after that, Planned Parenthood versus Casey. And I think that we need to just stick with the framework as set forward. I think that a woman, should have the right to choose and have access to safe, affordable reproductive health services. And part of their issue on abortion is to talk about prevention. Women should have preventative health care, and they should have access to contraception, and we should not be trying to cut back on contraceptive care. It should be easily available and a basic part of a woman's health insurance. If women are going to pay money to buy health insurance, then contraception should be part of that. And I think that, any discussion on abortion rights should also talk about contraception. But I support Roe v. Wade, and I think that these are decisions that are to be made by women, their families, their physicians, and within their own religious tradition. I trust in women to make the right choices.
What role should the federal government have regarding marriage?
You know, I support equal marriage. And I will tell you, I was not always, I did not always come from a position of supporting equal marriage, because I had always thought that civil unions were sufficient. But for me, this all sort of changed for me when I was wounded and was in the hospital, because of a situation that happened in my own experience. I was in a medical coma for about 10 days, and during that period, the doctors came to my family and said that we think we should amputate the rest of one of her legs because it's going to be in the way, and she'll be in more pain, and she'll have to go through the trauma of making the decision. We think you should do it. And my mother, being a loving, wonderful woman that she is, did what every mother wants to do, which is minimize her child's pain. And she said, absolutely, take it. She's still unconscious. Go ahead and do the surgery. And my husband had to stand up and say, no, we're not going to do that. If there's any chance that Tammy can learn to walk again with what's left, then I want to give her that chance. And I understand she will go through pain and suffering. But I know her, and I know that she would want to have the shot at being able to walk on that leg. And my husband was absolutely right. He's my life partner, my soulmate, and he knew me better and made the better choices and the correct choices for me. And he had the right, as my husband, to do so. And so for me, you know, my position on equal marriage is just that. It's about love. You should always have someone who loves and knows you best. You should have the right to have them there. And that's how I arrived at my position. So I support the freedom to marry because, you know, everyone deserves the same level of access, support, and love.
All right. Foreign policy. What foreign policy issues do you see as paramount for the U.S.?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. I think that we certainly need to look to our policies in the Middle East. We need to stand with Israel, and we need to not allow Iran to develop nuclear weapons. I think that we should keep all options on the table, but we should exhaust every option other than the military one in that instance. I wish we could bring our troops home as quickly as possible from Afghanistan. I know the president has a timeline. I would prefer that we could bring them home faster than that, but my position on that would be that we listen to the military commanders on the ground. I want to bring the troops home quickly, but I don't want to bring them home so quickly that we would have to send them back. And then I think we need to look towards Asia. This is how I ended up out in NIU going to school there before the Southeast Asian Studies program. I think the U.S. has left a vacuum in terms of influence in Asia that we need to reassume our role as a leader, because I think that other countries such as China have moved into some of the vacuum we've left, whether it's in Asia or even in Africa or in Latin America, in terms of Chinese investments looking for natural resources. I think the U.S. need to turn our face more to other parts of the world other than the Middle East as well.
Okay, and what do you think it is about you that sets you apart as the best choice for your district?
I'm very pragmatic, and I'm willing to work with anyone. I think that's my bottom line. My entire career, whether it was in the military or with not-for-profits or later on these last 6 years in government, has been about getting the job done and finding the practical solutions to the problems that we have. I don't think that most Americans live on the extreme fringes of the left or of the right. I sort of talk about how I live my life in the messy middle. I have my values and the things that are important to me and my family, but nothing is black or white. And so if we want to get anything done in this nation and to get this country moving again, we have to learn to work with each other. And so I think that's the biggest difference between myself and my opponent in this race. He is very, very much purely ideologically driven. And you can look at his votes to see that, and in fact has called himself proudly a poster child for the Tea Party, and that's just not where I am. I'm not going to Washington to say yes to everything President Obama wants me to say yes to, but I'm also not going to say no to everything that Speaker Boehner wants either. It's time to get to work, and it's time to cooperate, and remember that this the job is to to be the public servant of the people of your district and of your nation, not of a political party or ideology.
And one more question, kind of the big generic one. What other issues do you see as being important to your district, the state, the nation?
Well, I really think that until we get this budget and the national deficit under control, we're going to be stuck for a while. And it's so wide-ranging. I don't think there's any additional things. I think it's all part, you know, whether it's education or Social Security and Medicare and the economy, it's all intertwined. So I don't, you know, I can't give you a simple, easy thing and say it's going to be, you know, education, because education is part of our economy. It's talking about us being economically competitive on a global scale. We have to have an educated workforce. Our businesses have to be able to compete internationally. That means that we have to have programs that help support them be innovative. You know, all of these things are intertwined. It's a complex time right now in this nation, and we need some serious people who are willing to attack the complex problems.